It's hard to travel through Scotland without encountering the saints of that country. One day, as we were walking along the shores of Loch Lomond, our walk ended at the little lakeside town of Balmaha, where we discovered the St. Mocha coffee shop and ice cream parlor. It turns out that St. Mocha is more than just a clever name for a coffee shop. The town's name, Balmaha, derives from the Gaelic Bealach Mocha, which means the pass of St. Mocha. St. Mocha refers to Kentigerna, an Irish widow who came to the area to preach. She was shaped by Celtic Christianity and its empowerment of women. She wanted people who passed through the area to know God's love and hope. So to travel through Balmaha is to pass through the area where St. Mocha preached the good news. And now is a great place to get a cup of coffee. While we were in Glasgow, Tammy and I visited the Cathedral of St. Mungo. The name Mungo probably derives from the Welsh word for my dear one. Mungo's mother was exiled from her home by her father for getting pregnant outside of marriage. He sent her off in a coracle, a small lightweight boat with no oars, expecting her to die at sea. Instead, she drifted to the town of Fife, where her son, Kentigern, was born. Surviving the exile and the dangerous trip, it's no wonder that she would call her son Mungo, my dear one. Mungo went on to found the city of Glasgow and became its patron saint. So now everyone who enters the cathedral that bears his name hears the word that his mother called him, my dear one, and hopefully hears themselves the same way also. It should be no surprise, then, that when we reached the Isle of Iona, we encountered lots of saints there. St. Oran, St. Michael, St. John, women who lived at the nunnery, not called saints, but probably should have been. However, the person we heard most about was St. Columba. He founded the abbey in 563 with 12 monks who traveled together from Ireland. Under his direction, the Iona Abbey became a place to live and practice a Celtic Christian faith and way of life, a faith that sees the divine shimmering in all creation. In the cathedral of earth, air, and water, the sun, moon, and stars, the animals and humans, all creation. Today you can see Columba's influence in the Celtic art on the crosses there. You see his presence in the devotion of so many who lived and served until the abbey was abandoned in the 1500s. And you see his impact today in the way the abbey became an intentional community of people who follow a rule of life together. Rebuilt in 1938 by tradesmen and ministers, the abbey has continued to be a pilgrimage place and a place from which people are inspired to go out and live faithful lives in the spirit of Columba, who started that community there 1,500 years ago. Ever since the Protestant Reformation, we Presbyterians don't think about or talk about saints in quite the same way that our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters do, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't or don't have saints ourselves. In fact, we believe that every person who trusts in God and follows Jesus is a saint, and we certainly honor people for their faithfulness and how they inspire us to live faith. In his book, The Universal Christ, author Richard Rohr says that saints are those who wake up in this world instead of waiting for the next one. They are blood and spiritual ancestors we call upon for wisdom and guidance, and who might lead us into the great dance of life. Who do you call upon for wisdom and guidance? Fred Rogers referred to these people as the ones who loved us into being. I'd like to invite those people of your lives into our service today. I'm going to pause for 1 minute. And during that minute, would you call to mind the people who loved you into being? That practice makes All Saints Sunday real to me. I often connect with my grandmothers, grandfathers, my mentors, teachers, Sunday school teachers, and since my father's death, ancestors whom I never knew and who never knew me, but who live in and with me every day. In her book, Sacred Time, author Christine Paintner writes, "The stories of our ancestors are woven into the fabric of our very being. We let those lost voices speak through our lives and perhaps discover our own deepest longings are woven together with theirs." The Apostle Paul invited Timothy to recall the saints of his life in our scripture passage today. He wanted to inspire Timothy by reconnecting him with his ancestors in the faith. It was one of the last things Paul could teach Timothy to practice before Paul was executed in Rome. Paul wouldn't always be around to encourage his disciple, so he wanted to remind Timothy that encouragement was just a recall away of the people who loved him into being. We don't know a lot about Timothy, but if he had a weakness, it might have been his insecurity, fear, and timidity. Those were personal issues, but they were ignited by trying to live the Christian life and even be a pastor. To say that Jesus is Lord is also to say that Caesar is not. It was a political statement that could get you in trouble back then, even cost you your life. It was far easier to give up the faith, to fit in or get along. But Paul had mentored Timothy in the faith, and he knew that Timothy wanted more than just to fit in or go along to get along. That wasn't a life worth living, let alone a faith worth having. That's probably what made Timothy one of Paul's favorite disciples. He wasn't taking the easy path. He wanted more, even though it meant facing his insecurities, fears, and timidity, which is not something very easy to do. To add to that, Timothy may have been an introvert and uncomfortable with strangers, as one commentator noticed. Paul told the Corinthian church that when Timothy comes, see that you put him at ease among you, for he's doing the work of the Lord. He felt a call to work with people, and to do that, he would have to do more than just process life internally. He would have to use his energy to talk with people, build relationships, and even organize a church. One can only imagine the toll all of this might have taken on him. To his credit, Timothy was hanging in there, but the situation and his work may have affected him body, mind, and spirit. It should be no surprise to us that Timothy became the patron saint of those with stomach disorders. Previously, Paul had written to Timothy, "No longer drink only water, but take a little wine for the sake of your stomach and your frequent ailments." Timothy's stress was showing up in his upset stomach. In our reading today, Paul doesn't try to soothe his stomach with medicine. He invites Timothy to recall the people of his life who lived this life before him. It was a practice Paul did with remembering his own ancestors. And now he was inviting Timothy to do the same. Remember the faith that lived first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now I am sure lives in you. Let them be some of the medicine that calms your stomach and your stress. You don't have to hold this life in faith all by yourself. You, Timothy, have received this gift of faith from others, dead and alive, who walk with you today. Let them strengthen you. I wonder if life and faith had gotten so hard that Timothy had forgotten about the gifts he had received and the people who had given them to him. That seems to be one of the biggest problems of life and faith. We forget. We forget the people who have come before us. We forget the faith they have passed on to us. We forget to stay connected to a community where we learn love and hope together. We get so focused on our own lives and the stomach pains and the stresses that come along with the daily grind that we begin to let our insecurities, fears, and timidity rule who we are until we forget that we are made in the image of God, that what is deepest in us is of God, and that we have been gifted with so many blessings, including others who are cheering us on. I imagine that's why Paul said to Timothy, "For this reason, I remind you to rekindle the gift of God that is within you." Timothy was forgetting. He was slipping back into those unhealthy ways of living that encourage our forgetfulness and our stomach pains. But he also wasn't doing the kinds of practices that help him remember. That's what made Paul a saint to him. A wise guide and mentor can remind us of our heart's true desires and how to live with more integrity. To rekindle the gift of God that is within you is also to be intentional about a way of life that will actually fan the flames of faith in us. Inspired by St. Columba, the rebuilt community of Iona Abbey developed a rule of life to help them rekindle the gift of God in them every day. And there are four parts to the rule. The first is daily prayer, worship with others, and regular engagement with the Bible and other material that nourishes us. The second is working for justice and peace, wholeness and reconciliation in our localities, society, and the whole creation. The third is supporting one another in prayer and by meeting, communicating, and accounting with one another for the use of our gifts, our money, our time, and our use of the earth's resources. And the fourth is sharing in the corporate life and organization of the community. These four practices are how Iona community members rekindle their commitment to faith and life together, what they commit to in their everyday lives. And it's interesting to me that the members don't wait for big moments in life to happen, a birth, a death, a war, a sudden tragedy, or a life change before living their commitment. They rekindle the gift of God in them through practices every day with the help of a community who helps them ask a fundamental question: how shall I live my life? That's a question we've been exploring in our study of the book Life Worth Living. In it, the authors write, "How shall I live my life is a question of purpose. It asks what ends you ought to pursue. Life isn't a series of crises calling for heroic moral deeds. Most of the time, life is a series of small, seemingly insignificant decisions and non-decisions. It's made up of habits and assumptions and incremental changes. The shape of who we are and how we live isn't Stonehenge. It's not made by stacking a few massive rocks on top of one another. It's built over time, brick by brick." Our version as a church of building a life worth living, brick by brick, is the covenant we made a part of our church together a few years ago. We aren't waiting for some big moment in our church or in society to affect us. We aren't basing our hopes on how well we are organized or if we have figured everything out yet. We aren't basing our future on the next new person that comes into the church. We ground our life and ministry together in a commitment to nurture the gift that is already within us. A commitment that every stewardship season is truly about. Because the best stewardship doesn't simply pay the bills. The best stewardship rekindles the gift of God within us and our commitment to be church together in the joys and sorrows of life, in the clarity and the confusion of ministry, in the ups and downs of a world seemingly out of control, in the deep desire we have for community and for belonging. So let me remind you today, like Paul did for Timothy, to rekindle your commitment to our lives and our life together as a church with three words: pray, engage, give. The faith that we share here today is a gift from others who came before us. We have the gift of this place, unburdened by debt. We have received this ministry not from perfect people, but from saints who devoted themselves to sharing their faith and life with all of us who follow in their footsteps. Rekindle the faith we have received with your prayer, your engagement, and your giving, like they did. Stop waiting to do it perfectly. Stop waiting for us to be perfect. And start practicing the covenant promise so that the flame of life will be strong in you. That's when the saints will be most honored, not by devotion to the past, but by the embodiment of the faith they shared in you. Amen.